Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 17 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
Last sermon we had begun in the subtopic of For the Righteous, what is the value of tribulation? So this is a particular subtopic of extreme value to you individually, because there are certain things God has indicated in the Bible are of great value so far as we're personally concerned. There's a reason for the things that are being experienced. Now, we're not going to achieve in this life unless we recognize all facets of God's intervention in our lives, the things that He permits or allows. I'm constantly reminded of the situation with Cain. If we go back and read here in Genesis 4 and verse 7, and I'm going to read from the Living Paraphrased Bible, here in Genesis 4 and verse 7 it says, God speaking now to Cain, because if you will remember, Cain's offering had been rejected, whereas Abel's was accepted, and Cain was bitterly complaining about it. Why was Cain bitterly complaining about the fact that his offering before God was not accepted? What you have to remember is it was the same God. The same God before whom Abel came is the one that Cain came before. And God would not accept the one, but He accepted the other. So we are certainly talking about those that were called to and given the privilege of knowing that God Himself. It did not say this was a strange God that Cain was serving. They went before God, the true God Himself. Now in the process of time, this God came down because Cain was disillusioned. His face had fallen. He was crestfallen. He was troubled and perplexed. And he was enraged because of his rejection. And let me assure you, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to fall in that same category. When they find out that they are not acceptable in the sight of God, there indeed is going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And a lot of it. So here now is the response of God to this situation. Speaking then of Cain and of his future. It can be bright with joy if you will do what you should. Don't justify yourself, in other words, God says. Quit looking for avenues of self-esteem. Accept conditions and circumstances for their ultimate intent or purpose. Your future can be bright. So can the future of every one of us, if we refuse to fall prey to the character or the lack of it of Cain. If we do not subscribe to conditions and circumstances in our lives as Cain did, walking in the way of Cain. But if we respond in personal sacrifice, typified by Abel, we can be completely and thoroughly acceptable in the sight of God. So God is saying to Cain, it, your future, your life, can be bright with joy if you will do what you should. But if you refuse to obey, if you do not accept the factors for what they are, if you do not accept life for what it is, if you do not accept the conditions and the circumstances of life for what they may be, if you refuse to obey, to respond to the purpose of life, the purpose of all conditions and factors with which we are confronted day by day, watch out, he said. Sin is waiting to attack you. Sin. And what is sin? Romans 7 and verse 23 tells you that it's your own nature. That's right. It's all sin is, my dear brethren, is the fulfillment of your natural minds and hearts. doing whatever comes to you naturally, responding normally, naturally, to the stimuli of life itself. That's what human nature is. Human nature is not something estranged from us. It is us. Sin is doing what comes naturally to you, to your minds. Now God says, I know that, Cain, because I made you. I made you with that kind of a nature. But I didn't make you with that nature to live up to it. I gave you that nature to master, to overcome. He said, but if you refuse to obey, if you refuse to do my will, watch out, sin. The pursuit of that which comes naturally to you and the consequences thereof is waiting to attack you, longing to destroy you. But God says, you can conquer it. Or as the RSV says, you must master it. Now that's what Christianity is all about. It's personal mastery. Or, as the Bible so often says, overcoming. Overcoming what? Your natures. And the normal, natural, almost intuitive responses that we manifest day by day in relationship to that stimuli. And the stimuli can be a trial or an experience or an unusual circumstance or whatever that we encounter day by day. Now, God says, master it. Now, God himself is the one that has allowed even his chosen to experience many adversities. All who will live godly shall suffer persecution. Why? Why does God want us to go through it? Why do our trials seem to mount when we begin to obey God? Sometimes they seem to get worse and more trials because God is working on that nature. Remember, as long as you were subscribing to the whimsical nature with which you were born, there was no unique problem. You did that which came naturally, so you weren't fighting anything. But the minute you start fighting it, you're going to find it surfacing more and more and more. That's why it seems like Christians experience more adversity. Or they've always been there, you just haven't done anything about them. You went along. You catered to it. Now you start fighting it, and you're going to find how intense it really is and what kind of a problem you're up against. But there is a real value in tribulation, trial, proving for all the righteous. And those are the values that we want to come to understand. So the last time we had gone up to Psalms, the 18th chapter, reading verses 3 through 7. Now let's go to Psalms, the 32nd chapter. Psalms 32, and I want to begin in verse 4, reading verses 4 through 7. Psalms 32, and beginning in verse 4. He said, for day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My moisture is turned into the drought of summer. Selah. I acknowledged my sin unto you, and mine iniquity have I not hid. I said, I will confess my transgressions unto the Lord, and thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. Selah. For this shall every one that is godly pray unto thee in a time when thou mayest be found. Surely in the floods of great waters they shall not come nigh unto him. Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. The term trouble here is this T-Z-A-H-R. It's the same word. The word that means adversity or trial. See, we're now studying the word trial. So the term trial is synonymous with trouble or difficulty. Now, preservation means the ability to weather time and circumstance, isn't it? Isn't that why you preserve pickles? They're preserved so they can weather time and other circumstances. We're going to be preserved, which means we're going to weather the times and the conditions of life. And out of that preservation, we're going to become a fine product on the other end. Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Thou shalt compass me about with songs of deliverance, which means we're going to be delivered out of those difficulties. So here then shows once again that there is an enormous value to the truly converted of God, the righteous, for every trial or every experience which he goes through. It is the act of preservation. It is the fulfillment of purpose which God has in mind. And so God is working on us, preserving us unto that day for unique and specific purposes. Now, if we don't go through that, if a pickle doesn't go through the normal preservation process, what happens to it? It spoils, doesn't it? If we don't go through it, we're going to spoil. That's what it's all about. Next, I want you to notice Psalms 44. Psalms 44, and let's begin in verse 1. The whole chapter here is now one which we should read. Psalms 44, beginning in verse 1, and let's emphasize now verses 5, 7, and 10. Psalms 5, 7, and 10. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us, what work thou didst in their days, in the times of old. We have heard too. And remember, the word heard in the Bible does not mean merely a matter of reading. It means that it got our attention. Hear, O heavens, hear, O earth, said Isaiah. Meaning that the vast majority of people may read. They may read the Bible, but they don't comprehend. They don't hear anything that's going on. Now, David is addressing, by inspiration of the Holy Spirit, a historical review in which our minds, or our ears particularly, must be attenuated to the purpose of the historical past. And in being attenuated to that historical past, we hear it, which means we comprehend its relationship in our time. For those things were written, not for those people, but for us, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Those are the people that hear the historical past. They understand its necessity. Now, David says, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us. How did they tell us? They recorded it here in this book. What work thou didst in their days, in the times of old, how thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand, and plantedest them, how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. For they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither by their own arm save them. Neither did their own arm save them. But thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. So we're not going to be saved today because of our own integrity, because of our own strength or our own might. We're going to be saved because God has a desire for us. And he had a desire first in selecting and choosing you. And then in choosing you, he also had a future purpose or design. For he said that it is his will to bring to fruition the work of his hands. He did not call us to become duds or to be lost. For the most part, in God's own time and order, I understand that there are certain incorrigibles. I know that and realize it. But I am saying, generally speaking, the vast majority whom God has called and with whom he is working will make it. But it is going to depend upon the level of input from very, very minimal trial and experience because of faith and confidence on the part of some, up to the severity of tribulation in the last days, in which they're going to lay down their total lives with unique problems that are going to come to pass in order to prove themselves worthy of entering into that kingdom. Now, we can decide for ourselves, if we're the called and chosen of God, whether we want to act upon faith and to be faithful and loyal to God at this moment, and therefore experience only minimal trial. All who are godly are going to suffer persecution or trial. But the severity of it depends upon the level of our faith and our conviction. Now, if we don't want to go through the most severe of all trials and experiences that are destined to befall this earth, then we should act in faith right now and believe it and have that confidence and that trust. Then we shall become the recipients of God's plan, his purpose in our lives. So what did he say? They got not the land in possession by their own sword. We're not going to achieve it by our own integrity or by our own foot. Neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. God is going to bring us to the completion of his work. He has a desire for that, the workmanship of his own hands. Thou art my king. That is his supreme ruler, the one that has authority in his life, the one that we look to. We obey all other human beings only insofar as it does not go contrary to the true king who rules in our lives. That's what David said. David here is talking about that the ultimate authority is God. Thou art my king. He rules supreme and absolute in my life. Which means that if any human being should say that he rejects that authority, the supremacy of God, and that particular individual arrogantly asserts himself, that we will obey our king rather than men. What he is saying is, thou art my king, O Lord. You rule supreme in my life. Whatever you will, whatever you purpose, that is what I accept. Command deliverance for Jacob. Through thee will we push down our enemies. The term our enemies here is this Tzar, T-Z-A-H-R. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Our enemies can be other human beings. It might be ourselves. Remember, our greatest enemies are ourselves. Or it might be conditions and circumstances in life. Whatever those enemies are, whatever our difficulties are, it's a source of our trial. Trials come because adversity is administered by some factor or some human being. And we have to accept, then, the purpose of that trial, what God permits or allows in our lives. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. And I don't care what they are. Through God we can perfectly master. We can overcome all things. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. That's right. Our salvation is going to come in accepting what God purposes. But thou hast saved us from our enemies. Now what he is saying is that the enemies are going to strike, but we're going to be saved from them. But thou hast saved us from our enemies. Or the term our enemies once again, Tzar, T-Z-A-H-R, and hast put them to shame that hated us. And for the most part, our problems come from people, you know, outside of us. Either from ourselves, our carnality or our natures or from other human beings. And we have got to whip those problems. In God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever, Selah. But thou hast cast off and put us to shame and goest not forth with our armies. Thou makest us to turn back from the enemy, Tsar, and they which hate us spoil for themselves. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat. Here David is very clearly indicating that we have been subjected to all these conditions. God did not call us to lift us up out of this cauldron of trial. That's why Egypt, you know, is become spiritual Egypt in the sense of its present-day application. We're in the iron furnace, the bondage and servitude that is ordained for our time. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. And so times there is a scattering process that's going to take place. You know, I have thought and thought many times on why God allows this. But you know, it becomes very, very obvious that if we can stand as an entity, as a group, we do not prove our individual capability of standing at all. I can understand why God allowed the severity of trial that WWC experienced in these last days. I can tell you why. Most of them have proven that they do not want to stand at all if they cannot stand in reference to some giant work, not faith and confidence in God, but some giant work. They have to identify with something. You know, it's strange that psychologically that is true of nearly all people in the world. Why do they join various organizations? Because they want to identify with causes, don't they? It's a human trait. It's a human characteristic. But then there is a second factor involved in it, because they do not want to stand alone. So they identify in a very positive way with two things: the size of a group and the purposes of a group. And let me assure you that those are precisely the reasons why people departed from the faith once delivered. God allowed us the severity of trial in these last days to see if we can stand alone in faith and confidence with respect to that truth God gave to us. Now, I did not say that we have to stand, you know, we have to break from one another. Why can we not stand individually, collectively? There's no reason why we can't do that. Now we're proving to the world something, that we do not stand because of any human being, and we do not stand because of a particular cause, but we stand because of our faith and our confidence in God, and what God has wrought in our lives, the purpose for which he has called us. That's what God wants and what God is looking for. That is the judgment that is upon the household of God right now. And the just are going to live by faith. I do not know to this day how many will yet falter. I'm going to do my level best to be sure that I'm not accountable for their falling. I'm going to say everything I possibly can, but we have got to stand alone as individuals with our feet down firmly and then stand in harmony one with another, because Christ is not divided. He said, "Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat and hast scattered us among the heathen. Thou sellest thy people for naught, and dost not increase thy wealth by their price." See, David was very distressed with the fact that the very people of God, that was the church of God originally, was scattered. They were scattered all over the world. And superficially, it would appear that there was no purpose whatsoever. But let's notice what he said. Thou makest us a reproach to our neighbors. And that's probably what we will become in process of time. A scorn and a derision to them that are round about us. In other words, the Gentiles or the nations. Thou makest us a byword among the heathen, a shaking of the head among the people. And there are so many places in the Bible that tell you that is precisely what's going to happen to the true servants of God in the last days. They're going to become a hissing byword. They're going to be a reproach. All kinds of things are going to happen. My confusion. Now, what David is saying is that all of this was a very confusing problem to him. My confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. Here he recognized that all these things which had come to pass had a reason, a cause, a purpose. And he said, these things, my confusion, my bewilderment, the condition of my perplexity, the uncanny problems that I have been experiencing, all these things, shout loud and clear, you've got a problem you have not mastered. My confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. For the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth by reason of the enemy and avenger. All this has come upon us, yet have we not forgotten thee, neither have we dealt falsely in thy covenant. See, they had gone through certain things, and they had experienced many, many situations, but he said, we haven't forgotten you, and we have not dealt falsely at this particular point. Okay? Our heart is not turned back. He is showing that by that faith and that confidence, they held firm and faithful to the purpose of God. They had not turned back. So regardless of what we go through, will we subscribe to our confusion and our own shame? And will we attempt to resolve it by catering to the whimsical self? Or will we refuse to forget God, refuse to deal falsely with our covenant, and in our hearts refuse to turn back? Will we stand tall and firm in the purpose of God is the question that stands foremost. Where, oh where, my dear brothers and sisters, is the day, the time, the condition that will be your nemesis, if there is one? Will there ever be one? Or have you already determined that there is no condition, there is no human being, there is not one circumstance on the face of this earth that is going to take me away from that way of life? Many people have faltered. Our heart is not turned back, neither have our steps declined from thy way. Though thou hast sore broken us in the place of dragons, or jackals, and covered us with the shadow of death. Why covered with the shadow of death? They despaired of life. If we have forgotten the name of our God, or stretched out our hands to strange gods, or to a strange god, shall not God search this out? So if there is anything that we are doing, and if there is any deception on our part, and if we're not true, and if there is any unknown factor, God is going to search that out. That is the judgment upon the household of God. Now, in some cases, it can be deliberate. For even the Bible says, be not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Why would it be mockery except we were kidding ourselves thinking that we're going to get by with it. In the other case, we are truly ignorant of what we are doing, and when it is revealed by physical circumstance, we will respond. So he says, shall not God search this out, for he knows the secrets of the heart. God knows what is essential or needful. God knows whether we're giving the right sense of direction to our footsteps, our paths of life, or not. Is it not characteristically illustrated in Jeremiah, the 17th chapter, verses 9 and 10? Does he not read our hearts and our minds? Even to give us according to our own doings. He knows what our hearts are. He knows what our minds are. And he reads them. Now, here's what he said it in another way right here. It's exactly the same expression. So shall not God search this out? For he knoweth the secrets of the heart. Now, he's going to find out. Where are the weaknesses? What are the unique problems or the difficulties? And he's going to present them to you. Now, when they're presented to you, you're going to do one of two things. You're going to justify yourself on the basis of your own carnality. Well, he deserved it, or well this, or well that, or whatever it is. Or you're going to look at it and say, there's a defect in my life. I will not tolerate that. And set to work to master it. Yes, that's what God does. That's his purpose. Yea, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. For thy sake, God is breaking us down hour by hour and day by day. Conditions and circumstances. Our enemies trying us. Whatever those enemies may be. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Indeed, for a refinement process. That's what it's all about. But brethren, let me assure you that merely knowing it is going to be of little value. What we've got to do, brethren, is live up to it. You know, I've said so many times that peace is created. It's not natural. We by nature are children of wrath. Peace is created. That means we set about it. And you know, how many times do we falter daily? Oh, brethren, I know how many times I do. And you know, I go out just sick at heart when I think, you know, I wonder when the patience of God is going to finally be worn out. Because I've made up my mind so many times I'm going to whip the battle next time. Never will I get out of sorts, or I'm not going to let that affect me. Adversely or whatever it is, sure enough, the next time comes, you do the same, as they say down south, cotton-picking thing. It doesn't distress me with respect to the other people. It distresses me with respect to myself. Because one of these days, I want to react perfectly to all given situations. I know that's what God is shooting for. I know that's what character is. So, you know, I'm not going to look at somebody else and say, well, he got what he deserved. No, that isn't why God gave it to me. Whether he deserved it or not is immaterial. Because God did not give that to me to censor or criticize somebody else. God allowed that experience for me to master, as he said to Cain. You can't do it if you don't stop and think first. And say, well, now what should I do? Now, wait a minute. Number one, I always know this, that the problem is not with somebody else. It's with me. I'm the one. Now, if each one does that, that takes care of the problem, doesn't it? But what if the other one doesn't do it? Does that mean you're justified then in doing the same thing? No, you still have to master. The one may make it and the other one may not. So what the other party does is immaterial. What I'm saying, brethren, is you, individually, must master whatever it is in your life. I keep hammering this point, brethren, because God says the overcomers are going to inherit everlasting life. I'm going to hammer it and hammer it because I want to see the perfection and the character that God willed we should experience. I want to see it in my own life. I'm not going out and criticize or censor you individually, but I will, with all the power that God gives to me, proclaim it in these very sermons. We have got to master it, and we have got to overcome. You know, I don't want one of us standing on the threshold of that day looking back and saying, oh, if I had only believed then. Right now is the time to believe and to do something about it. Let's go on to perfection. Let's create it. And let's make ourselves the exemplary servants of God. Yea, for thy sake. For his sake? Yes, because he's the one that called us. It's his purpose. For thy sake we are killed all the day long. That's what we'd better be doing. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. We are the sheep of God, and the slaughter is going on, the slaughter of self. Awake. Why sleepest thou, O Lord? Arise. Cast us not off forever. Don't let us falter now. In the midst of this trial, keep your purpose up. Don't give up on me, is what David is saying. Please, just give me a few more opportunities. Stay with me, O God, because I want to come on to a conclusion. I want to achieve your purpose. Don't cast us off. Don't give up. He's begging God. And you know, we need to do a little begging too. Each one of us. Crying out to God and asking God for an extension of time. You know, if we'll come with that spirit and that attitude, there isn't any question, you're going to get it. Because God has a desire for the workmanship of his hands, and you're it. You're the operation of God. It's perfect character building. That's what he's working on now to bring you to that day when you can be born into the glorified divine family of God. When no longer are you going to have to struggle against the wretchedness of this self and of this mind. Boy, what a day that's going to be. I'll tell you, if in that day comes when I lay this life down and I know I have made it, they're going to hear this voice from one end of heaven to the other one. That's going to be the greatest, most thrilling, exciting day of my life. I mean it, brethren, and I mean it all with all that lies within me. I want to be there. I want that character, but I know that I can't go around kidding and deluding myself. I can't kid myself that I've got God over the barrel and whatever I say is, perfectly acceptable with God. Pardon the vernacular, but baloney. I don't care what kind of title, position, or anything else you have. You don't stand any taller than any other human being. If you don't master and if you don't overcome, you're in problems, regardless of what your name may be. Now, God says overcome, and he said master, and he told you precisely what to overcome and what to master. So wherefore hidest thou thy face, and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? You know why God does? Just temporarily. You know, we look at it because we go through a trial for, 2 days or 3 minutes or whatever it is, and we think, oh, woe is me. My, oh my, let me come out from under that. We don't want to go through any trials. But you know, in the sight of God, it's but a split instant. It's here and gone, just like that. And sometimes for us to really learn our lessons, those trials have to last a while. You know, if God reached down every time we, let me use language we all understand, every time we bellered, we would never learn anything, would we? We go back and do the same thing because all we got to do is cry out once again and God takes care of it. But he's going to, on the basis of what we permit or allow and the area in which we justify the self, God sometimes is going to allow it to take deep root, to let us know the gravity of what we're permitting or allowing. So you're not always going to get an instantaneous answer. Now, can we then look at it and say, what I'm going through today is peanuts by comparison to what I deserve? If I really got my just desserts, I wouldn't even be here. So thank you, God, that I still have my mental capacity. I'm still here, and I can still learn. And please, as the psalmist David prayed, please, don't remove the problem until I learn the lesson. Until you're sure that I know. Until you're sure that I can live up to it. Because I want it written deeply. Any of us have that kind of character? You know, we get to looking at our sufferings and our problems and our unique situations about the only thing. We don't care about the character at that moment. We just want to get out from under it. No, let's look at it and say, please don't remove it until I've learned. Because I want your character, and I want to be born into your family. But I don't want to be there if I'm going to be a nemesis, a problem, and I don't have the kind of character that I really need. I want to be born there when I have that character and I can be able to help others. Because I will have gone through the same experiences. And can you imagine the experiences that you have gone through when you're finally going to help out other human beings? You're going to look at it and say, oh, I understand perfectly. You know, I went through something very comparable to what you're going through right now. But let me tell you, if I were to take it away from you right now, because remember, you're going to have the power to do that. If I were to take it away from you right now, you wouldn't learn the lesson. I'm going to let you go through it. Out of love, because I want to share this kingdom with you also. But you can't share in it if you don't develop the character that you need. You see why God has not given to us human beings the awesome power that he possesses? You know what we would do? Number one, we would protect ourselves. Rest assured of that. I mean, anybody got in our way? Oh, of course, I know. It's because, you know, we were perfect with God. Sure, all people know that, don't they? I mean, we reacted because we know that's the way God would do it. Certainly. There isn't any question about it. Just ask any individual who's ever been through it. It doesn't even make any difference whether the two individuals are in conflict with one another. Which, in a sense, means that God is fighting himself then, isn't it? Or does it mean two human beings are fighting themselves? Wherefore hidest thou thy face and forgettest our affliction and our oppression? For our soul is bowed down to the dust. Yes, sometimes it seems helpless. And the trial intense. But then is not the time to give up. Our belly cleaves unto the earth. Arise for our help and redeem us for thy mercy's sake. And of course, God will do it. He knows how much we can take. He knows what our limits are. We do too. Our limits are very shallow if you ask us individually. But, you know, it's amazing how we can go far beyond what we think our limits are when God permits it and allows it. So you see, we didn't really know our limits after all. All we know is that we don't want to go through it because trial and tribulation are difficult. They're hard to bear. And they cannot be borne except with a proper mental, spiritual orientation, which means we grasp and understand the purpose, which also means the purpose for which I'm giving this whole series of sermons. That's why All right, next, I want us to notice Isaiah 59 and verse 6, not Isaiah, Psalms 59 and verse 16. 59 and verse 16, "But I will sing of thy power, yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning, for thou hast been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble." In other words, my trouble here, or the word trouble, is the word tsar, T-Z-A-H-R, which means in that particular day is when we draw closer to God. That's what David is saying. So trials then usually bring us to God. If we just have faith and we can see beyond the trial, and if we really have that confidence. Now, if we don't, it means that our faith is weak. Our strength is weak. What did Proverbs say? If we faint in the day of adversity, our strength is small. What strength? The strength of faith. The strength of purpose. So if we allow adversity to destroy us, we don't have too much character. God intends for us to whip it. Psalm 60, verses 11 and 12. Psalm 60, verses 11 and 12. "Give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man." Yeah, including yours truly. Vain is the help of man. I mean yours truly with respect to each individual. "Give us help from trouble." The term trouble here is adversity, or this tsar, T-Z-A-H-R. And our only help is going to come from God. So if our help comes from God because there is no help in man, then difficulties or trials force us into a relationship with God. And let me assure you, if we seek avenues by which to resolve these difficulties ourselves, God is a perfect character builder, and there's going to come a time, knowing and understanding all human hearts and all abilities and conditions and so on, when he's going to give you a set of circumstances no human being is going to take care of. Then what? I mean, the whole intent and purpose of trials and difficulties are to bring us back to God, into a close walk and a close relationship with God. Now, what are the areas of our complaints, our doubts, and our difficulties? Be fair. Write them down. And then ask yourself, why do they exist? And what are you going to do with them? That's what God wants. And that's how God wants us to master our own natures, our own minds, our own character deficiencies. In verse 12, he said, "Through God we shall do valiantly, for he it is that shall tread down our enemies." Our enemies, once again, is the word T-Z-A-H-R, meaning our trials. The trials are likened unto also the source of our difficulties. So our enemies are the source of our trials. And as I said, our enemies can be multiple. They might be people outside, they might be within the family, they might be relatives, they might be selves. Because the greatest enemy has always been the self. Next, I want us to notice Psalm 66 and verse 14. Psalm 66 and note verse 14. "Which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in trouble." Back in verse 13, it says, "I will go into thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in trouble." You know what David is saying? When we get in trouble, we do a lot of promising, don't we? "Oh, my God, if you will just do so-and-so, then I'm going to do so-and-so." David said that he was going to live up to it. And let me assure you, if you don't live up to your promises to God, you are in trouble. But it's amazing. You know, how many people have said, "Oh, if God, you just do so and so, then I'm not going to forget you, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, you know, and then things get going along real well, and we tend to forget, don't we? One of the most serious sins of a spiritual plane is forgetting. Forget not all of God's benefits is one of the commands of God. Forget not God's intervention in our lives. When he said, remember the Sabbath day, what he is saying is, don't forget it, which people are awesomely prone to do. So he said, I will go into thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay thee my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in Tsar, when I was in trouble. So it means then troubles, conversely, let's read this in principle backward. When in difficulty, I promise. And the difficulty has been allowed and permitted by God because he is a perfect character builder. And it's to bring me into a closer relationship with God. So I make promises and assurances to God. Now, when all things go well, don't forget your promises. For the ultimate intent and purpose of the experiences you go through is not to give you more experiences, to keep you in that configuration, because he keeps you nailed to the wall. Not at all. That's not the will of God. The will of God is to try you only to finally get you to the point when you remember and perform perfectly the will of God without trial and experience. See, it isn't God's intent to put you under duress and pressure for all eternity, is it? Then the purpose of your experience is to bring you to God for whatever length of time necessary to write the lesson indelibly, to get a response from you, and then hopefully that you won't forget to carry it out. That's the purpose. Next, I want you to notice Psalms 60. Psalms 102. Psalms 102 and verse 2. David had so much to say about this because David, of course, is the epitome of one called of God, subjected to trials and experiences. Psalms 102 and verse 2. Here he said, hide not thy face from me in the day when I am in Tsar, T-Z-A-H-R. Incline thine ear unto me in the day when I call, answer me speedily. So the idea is to bring us back to God. And God may be, well, God is always aware of his promises, but he wants us to call out to him for them and ask God to fulfill those promises and assurances, to give us that confidence and that assurance. Psalms 105 and verse 24. Psalms 105 and note verse 24. And he increased his people greatly and made them stronger than their enemies, or Tsar. So here was the national characteristic, or the national example, I should say, of the circumstance now that is applicable to us spiritually. And so God, in blessing his people, made them stronger than their enemies. So the day is going to come, if we fulfill the purpose of God, if we're faithful and loyal to God, that we as entities, human beings, are going to be made stronger than the trials we encounter or experience. That's the ultimate purpose. It causes us to grow. And by growth, it doesn't mean that we remain static. We grow stronger than the difficulties. And as you grow stronger and stronger against the odds of the difficulties which you experience, the odds and the difficulties fall by the wayside, or they may still be there. It's just like a child. When it's first born, look at the odds it's up against when it tries to walk. But when you grow up, you don't encounter those same experiences, yet you're going through the same problems, or the same difficulties are out there. I mean, they didn't just suddenly disappear. It's now that they are no longer applicable in your case because you have matured. Therefore, you're capable of walking. And so as we overcome the unique problems we're experiencing as children, infants, or whatever, spiritually speaking, as we mature more and more like unto the perfect stature of Jesus Christ, these same problems of walking fall by the wayside. They're still there, but we don't experience them in the same way. We have effected mastery, and we have the ability to walk spiritually. Next, I want us to notice Psalms 106. Psalms 106, and let's begin in verse 43. Many times did he deliver them, but they provoked him with their counsel and were brought low for their iniquity. So even their counsel was bad. In other words, they weren't honest and faithful in it. And they were brought low for their iniquity. Nevertheless, he regarded their affliction. The word affliction, of course, is the tsar. When he heard their cry, and he remembered for them his covenant. So it's to bring us back to that relationship and to call upon God to fulfill his purpose in our lives, to make us cognizant of what his promises are. Now, how are you going to be cognizant of them unless you are also aware of the promises and the assurances God has given and you have faith and belief in them? Now, I didn't say setting them aside because you want to justify the self. I am saying to look at them squarely, face on. Direct confrontation, admitting them and admitting your weakness in relationship to those problems, but then calling upon God for the necessary help to fulfill them is precisely what he has willed in your lives. So he said now, nevertheless, he regarded their affliction when he heard their cry, and he remembered them for them his covenant and repented according to the multitude of his mercies. He made them also to be pitied of all those that carried them captives. Save us, O Lord our God, and gather us from among the heathen, to give thanks unto thy holy name, and to triumph in thy praise. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. And let all the people say, Amen. Praise you, the Lord. So the purpose is to bring us into a perfect configuration with this everlasting purpose, and to be able to stand in absolute total conformity. That's why these experiences and troubles that we are going through. Next, I want you to notice Psalms 107, and let's read verses 19 and 28. Verses 19 and 28. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, in their tsar, and he saves them out of their distresses. Why don't you read the entire chapter? You'll find it a very interesting one, because I'm merely lifting texts out of context for the sake of time. But you read it, and I think you will be absolutely amazed at it. Verse 28. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, or tsar, and he brings them out of their distresses. So God then has willed to be with us, to help us through our difficulties and our trials, and the very purpose for giving those trials in the first place. Ezekiel 39, I have two more that I want to cover here very quickly. Ezekiel, the 39th chapter, and let's note verse 23. Here is a specific example of it in the case of a nation that is involved. Verse 23 says, And the heathen shall know that the house of Israel went into captivity for their iniquity, because they trespassed against me. Therefore hid I my face from them and gave them into the hand of their enemies. The word enemies is tsar. So God himself, because of defiance and rebellion, allows whether a nation or an individual to go through certain adversity and difficulty. So he then brings us back into a proper configuration with God by those things which he permits or allows in our lives. Hosea 5 and verse 15 now. Hosea the 5th chapter. And verse 15. Here Hosea has a very interesting statement that deals with all peoples. 5 and verse 15, I will go and return to my place till they acknowledge their offense and seek my face in their affliction. Sorry, they shall seek me early. That tells you that the purpose of tribulation or trial is to bring them back to God. And God does not do anything in vain. So it's there to build character, and if necessary, to subject us to these adversities, the depth of them or the intensity of them, to bring us back to God. And therefore, the graduated trial or tribulation, the intensity thereof, whatever is essential in the sight of God to bring those people back. And God is going to bring them back. And I'll tell you, if God has to break bones or whatever, they're going to be brought back to fulfill his purpose in their lives. That day is coming. Yes, indeed, there are the incorrigibles, but the vast majority of them have been mesmerized by themselves or by other human beings or by conditions and circumstances. But God is going to bring them back to the fold. Thank God for that. Next time, brethren, we're going to cover the principle, the fate of the enemies of God's people. What's going to happen to those who are the cause of our difficulties? They've got a lesson to pay, too.
Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 17 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.